more. Maybe it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Grass may have in the middle. We are grass may have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got a really fine guest with us this evening, and his name is Wayne Mattson, and he reports in the fashion or tradition of Drew Pearson, Jack Anderson, and I.F. Stone. It's sort of like a super merry-go-round in Washington, D.C. Welcome to our program, Wayne Mattson.
Hi, good to be with you.
Well, I tell you what, you've got such credentials. Tell us, tell our listening audience a little bit about your background.
Well, I basically specialize in national security reporting. Many of my sources are whistleblowers, people like Ed Snowden, but certainly I never spoke to him. But there were many, many Ed Snowdens who didn't get all the publicity that he received. They worked in the system and got done in by the system in many cases. So I really tell their stories and protecting them as sources. And I've been doing this for well over 15 years. So my background, too, is in NSA. So a lot of national security people are comfortable in talking to me because they know that I realize what risk they're taking by speaking to anyone from the press. So I go to extreme measures to protect their privacy and met some of these sources in very unusual locations of their choosing, not underground garages where Bob Woodward supposedly met Deep Throat, but in the middle of forests, in the closed down establishments, and places like that. So that's basically what I do. I get the story out that certainly would never appear on the mainstream media, and that includes 60 Minutes.
Right. You have a site, Wayne Mattson, report.com, and that's W-A-Y-N-E-M-A-D-S-E-N, report.com. And on that site, tell us how that breaks down on your site. You can subscribe to that site and so forth.
I have a public side to the website where I basically report with 50 comments, some news of the day internationally, and for the stories that I work on and are exclusive, there's a subscription. I try to keep, I've not raised the subscription rate since I started with subscriptions in 2007. It's, the subscription is $7 a month or $30 a year.
Well, we recommend that highly for people to go in and sign in and start subscribing to your site. You have a brand new book out now, and the publication date, I think, was midsummer. But tell us a little bit about this book. The title is National Security Agency Surveillance, and subtitled Reflections and Revelations 2001 through 2013. What made you write this book, and how did you organize your thoughts within this book?
Well, basically, the book is a compendium of articles that I had broken about NSA since 2001. And when I saw these revelations in papers like The Guardian from the documents leaked by Edward Snowden, I realized, aside from some names, code names or cover names of some of these systems. You know, this information had been reported earlier. I had reported much of this earlier. And so to put it all in perspective, I put together all the previous articles that I had written and then showed how they compare with the Snowden revelations. I have copies of some of Snowden's documents in the book, and so people can compare what we supposedly found out about NSA surveillance post-Snowden release and what was known and could have been found on the Internet very easily prior to his information being released. So when people say that he did great harm to national security, that's really a ludicrous statement, because a lot of this information was out before he made his revelations. But before one has a document in hand, of course, the NSA and their allies will say, oh, that's a crazy conspiracy theory. The NSA couldn't be listening to everyone's phone calls. They couldn't be targeting all these individuals with the documents. We find out, yes, in fact, they were, and the documents proved it. But the information was being reported on. I had sources in the NSA telling me about these systems as early as 2003 in some cases.
Right. They're trying to pass off some of their surveillance with metadata. Tell us something what that means, and how are they trying to sort of use that to gloss over this surveillance system that's been way overdone?
Well, metadata is basically collecting everybody's toll records on their phone calls, their email, header information, and they say, well, we're not looking at the content. But what that is, by collecting the header information on email and by collecting the phone call toll records, they are also amassing at this huge facility that they've built in Bluffdale, Utah. They are amassing the content as well of phone calls and of emails. And so the information that they have access to, the NSA analysts, is that's the phone calls, the dates, the times, the header information on emails, the dates and the times, and the subject line. And then they can go in, if they say if they have a court order, I doubt that is necessary, they can go in and retrieve the content. That's why they need a facility in Utah that can store 1 yottabyte of data, and that's a one with so many zeros after it, it's, you know, it's beyond many people's comprehension other than, you know, scientists and mathematicians. But anyway, that's what they're talk about in terms of metadata. It's mass collection, and then they can analyze the information later.
Right. They're trying to distinguish now, just like this latest German scandal with Merkel, you know, they're trying to differentiate the foreign collection, you know, of information from the domestic. And are they going to get away with that, or are the Germans going to crack down on them? What do you see in the future for our German-American relationship here?
Well, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, is really crying crocodile tears over this. Back in June, I reported, I was quoted in the Observer newspaper of the UK, and it was picked up by their sister paper, The Guardian, which has done, you know, done a lot of these revelations from Glenn Greenwald based on the Snowden documents. But I said, look, you know, when Merkel of Germany and Hollande of France were claiming, oh, back in June, oh, we the NSA spying on us, this is a great scandal, I pointed out that both Germany and France are third-party allies, partners of NSA, and they are collecting information on behalf of NSA and sending it to NSA on their own citizens. And this was the big embarrassment to Merkel and Hollande and the other European leaders, the Spanish and the Italians and so forth and so on, that they were caught. They were caught conducting these operations. So they, you know, for political reasons, they had to point the finger and say, "Oh, this is a scandal. Look, the Americans are spying on us." When in fact, no. And when I was quoted in June, I was viciously attacked by a group of NSA press shills, and they're out there. Many of them are obviously the Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island must have gotten some carve-out contract to carry NSA's baggage in these for this public relations program that they now have. It used to be that NSA would neither confirm or deny reports in the press about their what they were doing, their surveillance or their operations. Now they've taken a different tack. Now they use shills like the Naval War College, particularly two professors up there, to basically go to the media, go on CNN, go on MSNBC, and use Twitter. I was viciously smeared in June to the point where the Observer yanked not only the website, the web page on their website containing my story about the French and the Germans knowingly participating in this surveillance, but they pulled their print edition, which is very, very unusual. So the print copy of the newspaper, that particular edition, was pulled back from all over Great Britain. It was a result of this vicious NSA-inspired smear campaign. Now, yesterday, on October 29th, we had the director of NSA, General Keith Alexander, in testimony for the House Intelligence Committee, testify, he was under oath, that, yes, in fact, our NATO allies do collect communications intelligence on behalf of NSA and then share it with NSA. And that was followed by the release of a classified document in the Spanish newspaper El Mundo on the 30th of October, the very next day, where Keith Alexander is validated. His testimony is validated. There's a top-secret list of countries designated as third-party, or what they call tier B, B as in Bravo, countries that collect signals intelligence, emails, faxes, phone calls on behalf of NSA and share it with NSA. And on that list are Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Spain, Portugal, Greece, and even more surprising, some neutral countries that are not NATO, Sweden, Switzerland, and Austria. Even Iceland shares signals intelligence, and they don't even have a standing military. So information I was giving to the Observer back in June, which was called a fake news story by the Daily Beast, and that's for a bunch of people, it used to be with Newsweek. Newsweek is the front, and when you see the people that work at the Daily Beast, you can understand why this old news magazine, Newsweek, is no longer around, because they don't practice journalism. They practice propaganda and smear tactics, and they're a far cry from journalism. Yet they dominate the television airway, the cable, at least the cable news networks. They dominate MSNBC and CNN.
Right. You were talking about earlier about warrantless searches. Is this what they've been violating just grossly?
Yeah. This was after 9/11, and this was the issue that Bush and Cheney got in trouble with. It was called, warrantless wiretapping, where they weren't getting a judge's order under understanding U.S. law. You're supposed to have a court order to wiretap American citizens, or what NSA calls U.S. persons. They implemented a program called Operation Stellar Wind. That was the classified title of the program. And Stellar Wind basically was warrantless wiretapping. Now, the Privacy Act really opened the door for all this. So a lot of what we're reading about now with collection of information on U.S. citizens is under increased wiretap or increased surveillance provisions brought about by the Patriot Act. Patriot Act. The Patriot Act, which was passed after 9/11, and now even the author of the Patriot Act, Representative Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, says it's got to be amended. He says they've gone too far. They've gone way beyond what he ever envisaged, the role of NSA and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which is nothing more than a rubber stamp body that did approve these wiretap requests. But with Stellar Wind, they were going right around the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They were even going to them, which is a rubber stamp body, for authority. So, you know, Senator Brenner is correct, and as are a lot of other members of Congress who now want to see these powers conferred on NSA severely restricted.
Right. You have a video on your site, WayneMadsenReport.com, and it has such a plethora of differing people all the way from the left to the right. Oliver Stone is on there, a lot of other people, Lawrence Lessig and so forth. This is bringing a lot of different diverse politicos and so forth together. Is it not the threat against our privacy and our papers that we should, you know, keep well guarded?
It always does. These issues of privacy and civil liberties always tends to bring the left and the right, or liberals, conservatives, or libertarians together. What I call the corporate wing of both political parties that are really in favor of this surveillance. So, but yes, you get the odd situation, and I've seen this many times in the past, where you've got Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist senator from Vermont, basically agreeing with Rand Paul, the libertarian Republican from Kentucky. But we saw this back when the NSA got caught conducting similar surveillance in the 60s and 70s. They got caught in the 70s because of Watergate. And there were hearings in Congress over this, and then we had the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act passed as a result of these abuses. But we saw a similar coming together where we had senators like Frank Church really on the same page as senators like Barry Goldwater. So, again, this is not an unusual thing, and it's seen every time we have an issue like this in this country.
Right. There was a Stop Watching Us rally recently in Washington on the 26th of October. Were you there, or did you take part in that? I'm sure you supported
it. I was not there, but many friends and colleagues of mine were there. And again, they had a very good turnout, I understand. Again, just a plethora of different groups were sponsors of this from the left, from the right, some very key issues were talked about by the people who spoke. Former Congressman Dennis Kucinich spoke there, and several others. So the representative Amash of Michigan, who is, I believe, affiliated with the Tea Party. He sponsored legislation to curtail NSA, and it almost passed the House. It came very, very close. But I know for a fact that NSA violated the federal law because it was actively lobbying against Representative Amash's legislation. And it's illegal for government employees to lobby against legislation on government time, but they in fact did. And they've done it before, but nobody is willing to file federal criminal charges against these agencies that take taxpayers' money to lobby against passage of bills introduced by the taxpayers' representatives.
Right. I noticed that Mike Rogers, I think he sits as the chair of the Foreign Intelligence Committee in the House. He seems to be quite an apologist for anything totally that NSA wants to do. Oh, they're doing this. That's okay. But, you know, they're only doing this and metadata. I mean, I find him very, very disconcerting at times.
Yeah, Mike Rogers is a former FBI agent, so there you
right.
go.
Right. Okay.
I mean, he was obviously put in that position to give NSA a free pass. And that's what happens with these oversight committees. Dianne Feinstein is his counterpart in the Senate, and she's always been an apologist for the war industry, for national defense, for national security. Yet recently she came out after they found out they were spying on Merkel and obviously Netanyahu, who she's very close to in Israel. She came out and she said she's appalled at this. So she's okay. She's okay with NSA spying on law-abiding American citizens, but she's not okay with NSA spying on foreign leaders. I mean, this is a woman who obviously does not, should not be in the Senate, but, you know, California keeps electing her, you know, every 6 years. And so she's been there so long, she's absolutely a corrupt individual, and she no longer represents her own constituents. People in California are in favor of NSA surveillance. If you were to go to the Bay Area of San Francisco, which is her home, you would find a clear majority of people opposed to this kind of surveillance, as you would if you went to Los Angeles, and then certainly Northern California, where, you know, medical marijuana is a cash crop now. They don't like government surveillance, and she does. She doesn't. She hasn't represented her constituents, if she has ever represented them. But in her case, she hasn't represented them for decades.
Right. They had a recent book festival here last weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and they had a panel discussion, I think you'd like this, about the JFK assassination, and there were several people on there still pushing the single bullet theory.
Yeah.
I mean, they keep doing it, don't they?
They keep it up. They keep it up. And I'm actually going to be at the 50th anniversary conference in Dallas on the 22nd of November, but there was several conferences. There are several conferences now, and they keep pushing this meme that, you know, Oswald was a lone gunman. There was an op-ed in the LA Times the other day. One of the people who worked on the Warren Commission is still pushing a crazy idea that, you know, this bullet, magic bullet, Arlen Specter's magic bullet went through Kennedy and then did all these magical turns through Governor Connally. And then there's a guy, Jim Reston Jr., who's the son of the famous New York Times reporter, James Reston, Scotty Reston. He's got a book out, and it's actually going to be featured in the National Press Club Book Fair on November 19th at the Press Club in Washington. His thing is that Oswald wasn't trying to kill Kennedy. He was trying to kill Connally, and he missed.
Oh, yeah.
Connally and Kennedy. I mean, this is the most ludicrous thing. And my colleague, Andrew Craig, in Washington, has just written a book on presidential puppetry about who really controls these presidential candidates and who controls these presidents. And his book got rejected. He's a member of the National Press Club. And it's James Reston Jr.'s book on Oswald was trying to kill Connally, and Miss Connally, and then kill Kennedy. That's a featured book in the National Press Club Book Fair. So this is the power they still have to get these fairy tales out there, masquerading as history. When in fact they're just ludicrous. Ludicrous. They're just ludicrous. There's other books out claiming that Castro was behind the assassination of JFK. When in fact Castro himself says, I know a lot about who did it, and we'll know after he passes away, his archives are going to be released. And right. we'll find out that it wasn't Castro, but that in fact was a right-wing conspiracy to kill President Kennedy because, you know, the Bay of Pigs, they were unhappy over. They weren't happy about détente with the Russians, and they certainly weren't happy about what he told Israeli Prime Minister Ben-Gurion in the Oval Office, that Israel will get nuclear weapons over my dead body. Very prophetic.
That was Dimona. Dimona was the subject
That's
of that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
What happened, Wayne, was awful hilarious. On Saturday, they had these two panel discussions, and the one that they dealt with this single bullet theory, a guy got up, a questioner from the audience there got up, and he asked the guy that was the proponent of this single bullet theory, he said, could you elaborate on the magic bullet theory a little bit more?
Yes,
and you should have heard the laughter in that group. They're not going for it anymore. You know, the laughter, they just laughed out loud. It was hilarious.
The question was so subtle but beautiful.
See?
Right. I think most recent polling has shown across the country, across age groups, political parties, gender, ethnicity, shows that over 70% of the American public do not believe the Warren Report. And, you know, that should tell these people that still promote the Warren Report that the vast majority of American people are a lot more intelligent than these people who write these books are.
Right. Did you ever see the movie Idiocracy? You ever heard of that one?
I did, yes.
Well,
yes.
You know, I don't know, you know, exactly all the power structure, but I've studied it for 30 years, and you've got a good grasp of it, too. And it's getting crazy at the top of this whole system, it seems like, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, I've always believed that, and we saw this with the government shutdown recently, that that Washington, D.C., it's amazing that the government can continue to operate when it's so dysfunctional. And it is. And the fact
it is dysfunctional,
have,
yes.
It is. And you know, this thing with whether one agrees or disagrees with Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, or whatever one wants to call it, the software, the programs, the people were – this was the worst rollout of a government program in history, when, in fact, all the government needed to do – and I used to work in government IT, and I know the kinds of people they have working there. And instead of the government going out to any e-commerce, successful e-commerce site and saying, why don't you know, we'd like you to help us, you know, set up this system, these basically do-nothing neophytes working in these government agencies, especially, you know, healthcare administration and HHS, they put together this terrible system when, in fact, all they needed to do was go to Amazon or, you know, any one of these online, the people that even sell my book do better e-commerce than the HHS did with these health exchanges. But you know, the government has this thing. They have to justify a lot of these no-load government employees who sit around all day long and look at the clock. And these people also, their credentials are highly inflated in what kind of knowledge they have of information technology. So you get that you put two and two together, and obviously it was no great shock that people were logging on or couldn't even log on in some cases these government exchange, you know, sites to find out how much health care was going to cost. But that's just one example of many, many in the government. I didn't like the fact the government shut down. I'm not in favor of big government, but I think we should have good government. We should have workable government, and there is a lot of waste out there, and I've seen it. I've worked in it myself, and it's incredible. I used to tell people a joke. I said, you know, you can tell a government employee is winking at you because they open up one eye.
I was driving in to Washington, D.C. at rush hour one time, right in the Chantilly, Virginia area, and I did not see one sled or one old car coming out of there. It was all new, nice cars, you know what I mean? So the tremendous, they've got high salaries there and everything, right?
That's right. And you look at the D.C. area, I think now 6 of the 10 wealthiest counties in the United States are located in the Washington metropolitan area.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a tremendous amount of money there. It's extremely expensive to live in Washington, especially when you're trying to remain an independent journalist. So but yeah, you're right, absolutely. And a lot of people migrate to Washington because of the inflated large salaries. And, you know, even ex-members of Congress, whether they decide not to run or they get defeated, they normally stay in Washington because they're making even more money as lobbyists than they were as members of Congress.
Right. You, Ray McGovern had been on my program before, and was there a recent award presented to Snowden over in Moscow recently in that area?
Yes.
What was that about?
I'm not sure about who sponsored it, but Ray McGovern and Tom Drake, who was another, he was prosecuted by the government. They accused him of giving information to the newspapers when, in fact, he didn't give anything classified. And the government, their case against Drake was so outrageous that even the federal judge yelled at the prosecutors, essentially the charges were major charges were dropped. I think he had to plead guilty to misusing a government computer or some nonsense like that. But anyway, Drake and McGovern and Jesslyn Raddick, who she's a former Justice Department prosecutor, the whistleblower. A few others went over and met with Snowden and gave him this award in Moscow.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, you know, there's another thing, too, that came up during this controversy over the NSA, and also especially Snowden. They're pulling without warrantless searches or warrantless searches on people coming back from overseas of their electronic devices. Is have you run into that yet?
Yeah, I know. I have heard about this. This is the ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement branch of the Homeland Security that's doing this. And they have seized laptop computers, not only people flying back, but even people crossing by vehicle over the Canadian border, I know about. I assume it's the same maybe with the Mexican border, that laptops have been seized, even thumb drives have been seized. And they actually have the right, apparently, to do this, not only at the border crossings, but there's been established a security zone. I think it's 150 miles from the border where they can do the same thing. And this is rather alarming to me. I know people have been stopped, but I do know people at the border who have had their computers and cell phones, smartphones, taken. And there's no requirement for the Homeland Security to return these devices.
Right. There's a piece of paperwork called a report of investigation, ICE, Department of Homeland Security, ICE. And they're generating some kind of a paperwork thing when they come in and start seizing that from you at the border is what they're doing.
Right.
It's a technicality. And we're going to have that up on our site so people can download that. I'm thinking one of the associates of Snowden, this was done to him recently at one of the crossings.
Oh, I can imagine that. And also, Glenn Greenwald's partner had his computer seized in Heathrow. He was a transit passenger coming from
right.
Berlin to Rio, and they said they got some NSA material off of his computer. But, the journalists are under a lot of a very great threat in this country right now. I'm reminded of the recent case of Roger Shuler, former reporter with the Birmingham newspaper and a blogger who's been writing a lot about exposing corruption in Alabama, the people that put Don Siegelman, for example, in prison, the former governor. And he was recently brutally beaten and arrested by Alabama sheriffs and thrown in jail because he said he violated he was in contempt of court because the guy running for Congress, a Republican, the son of the former governor, Riley, he had written some things about Riley, sued him, and they said because he didn't show up in court or they refused to receive a subpoena, they waited for him, these sheriffs, and this is like a scene out of one of these movies. They beat him and arrested him. So this is what happens to independent journalists. It's happening more and more around the country. My friend Jim Risen at the New York Times, he lost his appeal. They want him to give his sources up before a federal grand jury on his book about the CIA. They want him to name his sources. And the appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, refused to dismiss the subpoena. Now that may be heading to the Supreme Court. So it's open season on journalists in the United States right now. Probably like we haven't seen in a long time.
Do you think that 9/11 was the most dangerous and diabolical event that ever has happened to this country, to America?
Well, I think so. I think so. I mean, we've seen a lot of through history, we've seen a lot of awful things take place. But I think when you look at the scope of what happened as a result of 9/11, you'd have to say, I mean, obviously the Kennedy assassination changed this country, and not, you know, for the worst. But if you look at both of those, you look at the assassination of a president in broad daylight in Dallas, and the Secret Service weren't where they were supposed to be. And you take that up to September 11th, 2001, and everything in between Watergate and Iran-Contra and the October surprise that drove Jimmy Carter out of office, all these things, I think, are all connected, because you can actually go and see that the same people are connected to all these events. And I think the Kennedy assassination and 9/11 are like bookends on America becoming a very draconian and dictatorial country.
You know, the JFK, memorial service that's going to be held there in Dealey Plaza on the 22nd, are they excluding this COPA group, or what's going on?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And I'm attending that COPA conference, and they said that this is the mayor. Everyone has to have a special guest pass to be on Dealey Plaza, and the COPA people attending, I think it's well over 200 people in attendance. They had full attendance at this conference. Were not invited, and it's not even clear whether people will be able to go to Dealey Plaza any time that day. And it's really frustrating for people that are traveling there. I've never been to Dealey Plaza myself, and to have the mayor ban people from seeing it, especially members of the media, I think is an outrage. But I think the mayor of Dallas is no different than the mayor back in 63, because obviously most of the people in Dealey Plaza that day were invited to be there by the CIA, by the mafia, and the other groups that were involved setting President Kennedy up in a virtual turkey shoot.
You know, Crossfire by Jim Mars, I was up there, Charlotte, and I did a four-hour broadcast live from the Texas School Book Depository a number of years ago. And they didn't know who we were, you know. We interviewed John Judge there the fourth hour. We had Alan Watts on there and people like that. And they finally found out we were on the conspiratorial side. They didn't want us there. But anyway,
if you had said you were with a PBS Frontline or
yes,
fine. Because you're not going to be saying anything. It's going to embarrass them or. Yeah, but yeah, they don't like it. One thing they don't like is the truth. And yeah, I mean, the whole history of the Texas School Book Depository, it was owned by D.H. Byrd, who was involved with these people who were behind the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
And so.
I mean, what do you got? I mean, you know, in that bookstore are none of the really conspiracy, good, well-written, truthful books. They're all a bunch of whitewashed. And then they have the sniper's nest up there on the sixth floor, you know, all set up behind plexiglass, you know. This is where it all occurred, you know what I mean?
Right. Unfortunately, the that bookstore, like the rest of them in souvenir shops, museums in the United States, unfortunately, as part of this museum propaganda complex, put out propaganda. They're not there to serve, legitimate historical research. They're basically, as some of these museums are about as close to historical fact as what you see in Disneyland, Disney World.
Right, the George W. Bush Library there, adjacent to SMU, it has like 9/11 for kids, 9/11 for students, 9/11 for teachers, 9/11 for truth. And you go in there and you get all this electronic stuff. It's so wonderful, isn't it, Wayne?
Yeah, right. And I understand they found a suspicious package at the Bush Library yesterday, and I figured it was probably a book, and they didn't know what one was there, so. It had to be suspicious.
Maybe it's a book on 9/11 truth.
It could have been. So they could have I heard there's, you can find everything in that George Bush Library but a book, which I think is fitting.
Right. There was a recent discussion or dispute between Snowden and Feinstein. Feinstein was claiming that the NSA spying isn't surveillance. How did we get that? How did she come to that conclusion?
Well, see, this was what she said prior to her being so outraged over the U.S. spying on foreign leaders.
Yeah, okay.
She said, she didn't consider that. Now she's changing a little bit, but I think it's because she found out her elite friends are being spied upon. But she's also going to probably eventually find out she's being spied upon.
And that's true.
So when it hits the upper crust, then it's to her, the Feinstein, it's a terrible tragedy. It's a huge violation of the Constitution. But as long as it's the little people, remember Leona Elmsley said, only the little people pay taxes, and Dianne Feinstein's the same way. She said, it's only the little people that should be spied upon, not the upper crust. So that's what has her panties in a twist.
When it's her bull being gored, then it's a pretty different thing, isn't it? Huh?
That's right. Yeah. So she doesn't understand the difference between spying and surveillance. I mean, this is typical. But again, she's there because, like Rogers, her counterpart, they're there because the NSA and the CIA put people there that are going to be totally supportive of everything they do. So there is no oversight. Congressional oversight is actually, in this case, is an oxymoron.
You know, there was, I looked into Google Maps to see where the U.S. Embassy was in Berlin, and it's very close to the Brandenburg Gate and to the Reichstag.
Yeah, it's the Bundestag. It's right,
yeah.
And it's
very
close to Angela Merkel's office. So,
okay.
These embassies have what are known as Special Collection Service units, and they've been around a long time. That's a hybrid CIA-NSA operation where they actually do bugging of offices. They use rooftop antenna equipment to conduct surveillance in these capitals. So we've seen one of the recent revelations is 80 of these SCS sites disclosed, and not just in Berlin, but Paris and Brasilia and Bogota and Rome and capitals around the world. And I think the next big outrage, or at least for the media, we're probably going to find out that the NSA has been listening for the phone calls of the Pope, maybe not this one, but in previous ones. And people like the Dalai Lama and Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma and Nelson Mandela and all these sort of icons. And there'll be a lot of, pulling a hair over that. But I think that'll probably be the next disclosures we'll discover.
Do you think that this collection of information is going to be used against, say, Tea Party and Patriot groups and militia-type oriented freedom, liberty-type fighters, or what?
I think right now where NSA is still they don't want to get caught doing that. Their focus is foreign. They do pick up this crossover, and we've seen references to it where you can't draw borders on the Internet anymore, so they get crossover traffic on occasion. They get traffic involving U.S. persons communicating with people overseas. What could they get on a Tea Party or anyone? Well, if the Tea Party was in any sort of email contact or phone contact or Skype contact with similar groups overseas, they would be, NSA would be collecting that data. But I think domestic groups, they were looking at what the IRS did, and ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement. Those agencies are more likely to target domestic groups than, at this point in time, than NSA. And of course, the FBI always targets these groups for surveillance. And there's nothing to stop the FBI from going to NSA and asking for a court order to conduct surveillance against domestic groups.
Well, what I didn't like about this healthcare, Obamacare thing, is that if you look at this Lee fella, I think Timothy Lee with the Washington Post wrote an excellent article recently. I believe that's the correct name for that correspondent. And he laid out the different companies that had different parts of the Obamacare software development. But in there also, he showed an excellent chart on the different databases that they had to pull together to establish whether you got a subsidy or whatever, you know, so forth, you know, what your bottom line would be cost-wise. And what I saw there on that chart was very disturbing because it's placing all of this information into the heart of the federal system that can be used politically against about anyone. That's what I see.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we still have the Privacy Act of 74 that's supposed to prevent that from happening, but we've seen nothing in the way of enforcement of the Privacy Act. You know, in recent years, after 9/11, there's just no interest in holding these agencies' feet to the fire, and again, that's the lack of congressional oversight as well.
Now, as far as 9/11 goes, and there's that truth movement out there, and I must say I'm a part of that, a big part. The public at large is having a hard time approaching that. You know, with the Building 7 falling down, I mean, being imploded and all that, what psychological mind boggle or problems do you see with the public accepting or moving to a better understanding of the 9/11 event?
Well, the problem is that they're not exposed to the other information that's out there. I mean, unless they go on the Internet and search it out themselves, you know, they're certainly not getting any of this from the 24/7 news networks, because at any time they talk about 9/11, it's always, you know, pejorative, the use of pejorative terms. It's, you know, somebody doesn't believe the official story there, and we hear all these terms like truthers and troopers, and that's led to birthers, and you know, all these just like after the Kennedy assassination. The term conspiracy theorist was actually started by a CIA operative officer who was assigned to counter propaganda, and the CIA considered propaganda emanating mostly from other countries, saying that the assassination of JFK was a right wing plot to get rid of the president. And we see, I got into the CIA archives and I found, I forget the name of the guy off, you know, top of my mind, I've written about this, but I finally found the guy in the CIA who was given the job of going after people that didn't agree with the Warren report, and he uses the term, these are conspiracy theorists. It's the first use of the term.
Right. Man, you know, there's a new book out, too, that they discussed at this Texas Book Festival, and it was about how right-wing, way to the right, rednecker Dallas was in 1963.
Right. Yes,
I think it was called Dallas 1963 or something like that. Well, those people, those two authors were there. Now, they didn't get into the conspiracy of the JFK at all. But they floated the idea that it was way to the right, John Bircher, mad people in the John Birchers and so forth, you know? And
well,
maybe that was enough to cloud Dallas or besmirch the city in general.
Certainly. We do know. I mean, I'm not saying the John Birch Society was involved in killing the president. We know it was the CIA and the mob and all, you know, and paid assassins.
Sure.
But you're right. Those authors are right. It, Dallas was the city, you have to have it in the right environment. Obviously, you have to own the mayor. You got to own the police chief, and they did. Otherwise, we would have had a better investigation of the shooting. We would have had better security presence. And none of that happened. And there was, they said that Oswald was stalking General Walker, who was this big right-wing guy, Edwin Walker, and that certainly was the case. Adlai Stevenson, the former presidential candidate and ambassador to Suez under Kennedy, had been in Dallas right before Kennedy made a trip there, and he actually went to the Oval Office and said, "Mr. President, I want you to look at this," and he showed him a picture of one of these Wanted Dead or Alive posters. They had a frontal view and a side view of Kennedy that he picked up, and he had eggs and stuff thrown at him. So, yeah, it was a very hostile environment, which I think allowed the plot, which I think involved mostly outsiders, with some key people in the Dallas city administration, and people like Jack Ruby, of course, to carry out the hit on the president.
Right. Also, Lady Bird and LBJ were mistreated in the lobby of one of those hotels one time in one of their visits during, I think, a campaign tour, trip up there also.
Right.
So,
right. So
they were Texans, see. So, Dallas was.
Johnson was also seen as being pro civil rights, so that would have definitely not.
Yes.
Made him
yes. Popular. Well, Edwin Walker was heavily on the segregationist side. It seems to me, from what I recall.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so he would, he had followers up there that were segregationists against the black integration of the schools.
There's been books written saying that Kennedy, that there were plots to get Kennedy in Houston, which I think would have been a little tougher. I think Houston was not quite as right-wing as Dallas, even with the Bushes being so powerful there. They weren't that powerful at that point in time. That there was a plot to get him in Miami. But Miami's, aside from the Cubans, not a very, friendly environment for that. And there was also apparently an attempt for Chicago. And when you know anything, people that know about the 1960 election, it was the Chicago vote that put Kennedy over the top. And, definitely Chicago would not have been a friendly environment to try to shoot the president. So out of all four cities, Dallas would have been the favored one.
Right. On this, will you attend the memorial service on the 22nd at Dealey Plaza or not?
I don't know what the situation is there. I've been reading, the releases coming from an organizer. I will be there if we're allowed to be there, but if we're not, I'll get there as soon as they open it. Right now, I guess it's still up in the air what the deal is.
When Charlotte and I went up there and broadcast from the lobby of the Texas School Book Depository, I went out before the broadcast and stood behind that picket fence, and then I paced off the distance between the picket fence and the X in the street where the first shot evidently hit Kennedy. It's about 55 feet.
Wow, yeah. I understand.
The distances are much shorter and closer up than you could imagine. Yeah.
I understand that when you are physically there, it's much smaller than you see on television or you remember, from the...
Any video or film or any report, news report, shows the grassy knoll a great distance away, way up there, but it's right up on the motorcade. It's right where the picket fence was. And it's just like shooting fish in a barrel, They're there,
Exactly. Exactly, and that's one of the things I want to experience that myself, because everyone I know who's been there has come back and said the same thing about, whoever was behind the picket fence, and we have to assume it was a professional marksman and an assassin. It wasn't that hard for him to get that fatal shot where you see him as a Zapruder film. Kennedy's right side of his head being blown off from the front to the back.
Right. We've got a little over 4.5 minutes. What is it that you'd like to conclude with, or were there some concluding remarks you'd like to make before we sign off?
Well, I think, the mainstream media is not, I don't think, doing an adequate job of reporting the NSA revelations. So I would urge people to do their own research. Go to the foreign media. Most of the in-depth reports are coming out of the European press. We're not seeing much. I mean, some in the Brazilian press, but you have to speak Portuguese or be able to read Portuguese. But there's much more in-depth coverage of these Snowden revelations in the foreign media than we're seeing over here. And I think that can be said about any subject, but particularly because NSA is basically muddying the waters with the U.S. media, getting their shills out there like these. This guy using professors at the Naval War College in Newport, and they've got a relationship with the Association of Op-Ed Writers, which is the people that write the op-ed columns in major newspapers. So we can see how NSA is involved in a huge propaganda blitz to get their story out in the United States. Unfortunately, the media is going right along with them.
Right. When I read articles, you know, in researching before we had this interview today, just to refresh my mind, of course, we talked before, you know, there were every time that they, you know what I mean, denigrated you or insulted you or name-called you, it put you one pedestal step up higher, in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know,
they do is name-call, see? That's
right.
What they do.
They're very good at that, but you know, I just refer back to what I had written before we ever heard of Ed Snowden, and people can believe what had been written in the past when they match it against what Snowden revealed, or they can believe what these Johnny Come Latelys are talking about. And I think as they say, the record speaks for itself.
Right. We want to thank you, like you're reporting in the tradition of Drew Pearson and Jack Anderson and I.F. Stone. We want to just encourage you to keep it up and keep reporting and hard-hitting, reporting out there, Wayne, because you're really doing a great job. And, that would be Wayne Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N, report.com. WayneMadsenReport.com. And is there anything about your book, any latest revelation or news about your book, publishing your book?
No, I'm constantly trying to get, if I get new information, I'm getting it into the book. So it's up-to-date information.
And it's going to be an excellent authoritarian reference book. You have so many different operations. How many in there would you say that you've named programs forth?
I think probably around 1,000.
You've got 1,000, and this book is a great book. I highly recommend it. It's going to be the reference book for several years to come about the NSA, and it's going to give people an insight on how big that they've become and how intrusive that some are claiming that they've become, and I agree with that. But thank you very much this evening, and we're going to be saying goodbye to you, and good luck on your memorial service and your speeches and so forth up there in Dallas on the 22nd of November.
Thanks much, and good to be with you.
Okay, Wayne, thank you very much. Appreciate
okay.
you being with us.
All right.
Okay.
I know.
Good night.